So my name is Lyle Estel, and I'm here in Pittsboro, North Carolina, which is in the woods.
I think I'm here today because 17 years ago, I wrote a book called Inquiries into the Nature of Slow Money, Investing as a Food, Farms, and Fertility Movement. And here we are 17 years later and about approximately 100 million.
I've been sitting here doing this for a long time. I'm a local economy guy. I was a biodiesel guy, local economy guy. Woody comes through town on tour, and I'm smitten. I'm blown.
Welcome to When People Lead. I'm Jeff Rolla. What if money moved at the speed of community? Today I'm joined by Lyle Estill and Woody Tash, two pioneers of the slow money movement. Let's get into it.
What if the money in your pension fund was quietly destroying the community you live in? Lyle Estill and Woody Tash have spent decades asking that question and building the alternative. Slow money, local investing, patient capital. They'll tell you that 80 million Americans already belong to a stockful, they just don't call it that. Today, we find out what happens when money slows down and stays home.
So, you know, we're at a point where the struggle is between fake and real. And there's nothing more real than local food grown in healthy soil and the people who are growing and consuming that food in relationship to one another in the land. So that's a big thing. And I'm hoping that we can engage millions of people by creating a vehicle for people to make a very small contribution if they are not in a position to make a direct loan themselves or start a slow money group in their community. I'm sorry that's kind of a long-winded answer, but it is what it is. I think I'm here today because 17 years ago, I wrote a book called Inquiries into the Nature of Slow Money, Investing as a Food, Farms, and Fertility Mattered. And that book sparked with a bunch of people, including a close colleague and friend of Lyle's, Carol Pepe Hewitt in North Carolina. And as I traveled around the country on basically what started as a glorified book tour, it became apparent quickly that a lot of people wanted to start acting on many of the ideas that were in the book. I won't even touch what came before that. Hopefully, a career in philanthropy and community development finance and small-time venture capital and different things will inform or make what I say authentic and hopefully believable. But we don't have to go into any of the gory details other than to say when I wrote that book, I wasn't trying to start a movement, but it did. And here we are 17 years later and about approximately $100 million worth of capital has flowed in a few dozen communities, mostly in the U.S., but a little bit in Canada, a little bit in France. We have a new group that just started in Israel a couple of years ago. It's tiny, but very promising. I've been trying to kind of, I'm not going to say it was quite a tiger by the tail because, the system change that we need is quite profound and we're just one tiny little thing creating a little change in one aspect of it. But the reason I'm still at it is because I think it's still possible to create change. Even though the odds seem horribly long. and right at this moment, we're like, it seems even more preposterous than usual. There are reasons to think that we'll get through the current thing. The current thing, which I'm not even going to name, is not really the thing. The thing is climate change and environmental degradation and irrevocable damage to the living systems of the planet and directly and indirectly all the people living on the planet, et cetera. So That's why I'm still at it. I'll say more about that as we proceed. The reason there's a slow money movement, in my opinion, as I kind of read the tea leaves as we've been going, is because if you just try to solve the problems of industrial agriculture, just talking about farming and the technical aspects of farming and food systems and whatnot, and you don't address the underlying economic challenges of flows of capital, access to capital, wealth inequality, commodification, financialization, globalization, you know, blah, blah, blah. If you don't do anything about any of that, the best farmer in the world is going to have almost an impossible task of making a living, which is actually what they're all facing. So if you, I would summarize that. Lyle, sorry this is taking so long as an introduction. I you know, when I'm finished introducing myself, we can all just go home. It'll be fun.
We have more than enough time. So Woody, just around the commercialization, I'm just going to briefly just to focus on that. So are you pro the commercialization of farming, or is it something that you're against, or what are you feeling about?
That's a wonderful question, and like an evening's worth of debate could follow that. But yes, like a small scale, a smaller mid-size, we'd have to get into what that means, diversified organic or regenerative farm, even when it's extremely successful, is a very tough way to make a living, right?
Very small margins.
Right. And so the whole question is, even though it's very productive in terms of how much produce can be produced on an acre of land and all these other things, and produces all these other benefits, the whole question is whether we as a culture can figure out how to value that or not. And obviously, so far, we haven't figured it out. I mean, except in small, isolated interactions and whatever, and that's why we're still at it. But we're trying. So to answer your question, you'd have to get into a whole rigmarole about economics.
Rigmarole.
but basically, I would just leave it at this. I think because of the local food movement and the tiny bit because of slow money and different things, people are saying we're willing to entertain new ways of valuing things and new ways of connecting. And we recognize there's a problem. I think, you know, the challenge is to get enough people moving in a different direction to create a force that can actually move the needle more than we have so far.
So my name is Lyle Estel, and I'm here in Pittsboro, North Carolina, which is in the woods of Chatham County. So we're in the south, North Carolina, and I have been working in the food shed for the last 35 years. And I've been an investor in farms. I've been financing farms. I've developed a variety of pepper. I have, we've been making food. I currently am still in the food business making, right now I'm making spiritus liquor at a little distillery. So I've been sitting here doing this for a long time. I'm a local economy guy. I was a biodiesel guy, and I'm a local economy guy. Woody comes through town on tour, and I'm smitten. I'm blown away with this concept of peer-to-peer lending. That's the part of what he mapped out that Carol Hewitt and Jordan and myself found interesting. We walked across the street from his reading and said, gosh, we could do something here. And we created Slow Money North Carolina. And Slow Money is took many forms in many places. So sometimes it was equity, sometimes it was lending, sometimes it was therapy. It was all kinds of things all over the place. And in the case of Slow Money North Carolina, we were fairly effective at peer-to-peer lending. And we did about 300 loans. We hit about $3 million. Our town is, by the way, this is a town of 5,000 in Chatham County, a population of 50,000. So this is tiny with, by the way, generations of investment in local agriculture and sort of Piedmont Biofuels was here. It was a local maker of fuel. We've been doing this kind of local economy stuff. So Slow Money that Woody, I'm not going to say he outlined it because he didn't. What he did is he inspired it, and people went away inspired, and they created different forms of what Slow Money is. So Slow Money is very different in Virginia than it was in North Carolina. Slow Money up in Maine is very different than the Slow Money in Vermont. And it just kind of went that way. And now, also, I've been out of the movement for a while now. Carol Hewitt is the one who carried most of the water. She's actually the one that you probably need to have on this podcast. She wrote a book called Financing Our Food Shed, and it basically tells the story of, you know, how that kitchen was going to have to close because their refrigerator broke, and along came $5,000 in low interest loans that allowed them to stay open, that allowed them to keep their place in our food shed. So that's what it was for us. It was lending money to a dairyman so that he could muck his stalls with a bobcat. You know, needed to raise $50,000 for a bobcat over here, $5,000 to fix a freezer over there, and so on. And that's what our slow money endeavor kind of did. We did pick up a note from the our local co-op grocery store, which I think probably kept it alive. Yeah, and that was something like $750,000 or something like that. But that's, we started taking a role in financing the food shed that we were already working on in myriad and sundry ways. How about that, Woody?
What I'd like to hear, you've explained the concept of slow money and peer-to-peer lending. How does it differ from microfinance in many ways? I'll start with Lyle.
Oh, boy. I suppose it is microfinance. I guess it's the question is the source. So in peer-to-peer, it would be your friends, family, your neighbors. Microfinance could be coming from what, I guess it could be strangers, or it could be a philanthropic fund or something like that. So it's about where it comes from, I think. That would be my definition, is peer-to-peer versus microfinance. Kind of the same, but not really.
Okay. Do the peers get paid back, Woody?
That depends on... Depends. In the case of what Lyle did, yes. In North Carolina, they made low interest loans. And the vast majority of the money that has flowed under the banner of slow money over the first 17 years has been in the form of low interest loans, often with no collateral. And they are hyper-local, for the most part, hyper-local. So the people live near each other. And that is a distinguishing feature to many other kinds of, you know, crowdfunding or microfinance. The reason I said it depends is because for the last several years, we've been pioneering a new model, which is based on donated capital and 0% loans. I do hope I get a chance to talk about that, which is where I'm kind of putting all my energy going forward for a bunch of different reasons. But that's still a tiny part of the overall slow money movement. I mean, that's been, you know, a few hundred loans and a few million dollars over the past few years. But it's, you know, we're leaning into that going forward.
Lyle, how do you get to from slow money to big money? I know Slow Money North Carolina has made some loans. You've been in and out of the movement periodically. Woody, are there regulatory requirements for the process? I know banks have their rules. Microfinance has its rules on how it's developed. How does slow money deal with the process itself?
Well, because there's not one way of doing slow money, and there's no one fund or no one instrument, there's no one answer to that question. But basically, we all, most of the local group, for the most part, local groups that endured doing slow money over many years, they either interacted with local state regulators and kind of made sure they weren't running afoul of anything, sometimes informally. And I think in some cases, people, you know, regulators just didn't want to bother because everything we're doing was very small. But in other cases, it was more formal. And then up to and including, now that we're doing the 0% things, we're actually creating small 501c3s in all of these places. So we're getting, you know, blessed by the IRS for a certain set of activities and a way of doing the loans and all of that stuff, which is a more formal clearance process, if you will, that says if you do this, this, and this, it's kosher and you can proceed. Now, just a comment about, you know, the regulatory environment in general does not make it easy to do this kind of thing per se. In other words, there's lots of friction for an individual investor who is not an accredited investor, without getting into the weeds on this, to just make a loan to a company down the street per se, although there are people like Michael Schumann and others working very hard and some community capital groups to create pathways for that to happen more. I've gotten more radical as I've gotten older, and I think what I'm going to say now is really only really relevant to a small and medium-sized farm, because a farm and a farmer, the farm family, the farmers who work that land and who are growing food for the local community, for the local market, it's about as far from the intention of a limited liability corporation as any activity that you could. In other words, there's no reason to go through all that other structural stuff unless you're going to try to go into distant markets, right? So keeping things as hyper-local as possible in the spirit of community-supported agriculture, even daring to say keeping it as informal as possible, I think is the way to go. But I want to just tag on to the last comment you made, Jeff, which is, how do you get more people to do it? Or Lyle said the same thing. That's a real question. If you don't have a standardized security that you can just click on, that you can sell a billion of yesterday, how do you get a lot of money to flow? And the answer is, it's much more inefficient. It's much more place-based. It's always going to be more inefficient than that. But I do think it's possible to get millions of people involved in this, and that's what I'm still trying to do through, I'll just say the word now so we can get it out of the way, bitcoin.org.
We'll get to Bitcoin. Don't worry.
No. But I just wanted to, because I just mentioned it there, because that's why I'm focused on that, to create a portal where it might be possible to get a lot of people involved.
Well, Lyle, you've been a serial entrepreneur most of your life, operating in the food shed. There are innovations coming down that I'm not aware of, that I'm sure you've seen, that say, that's promising. That's something that we should probably exploit. That's something we should probably get a bunch of people involved with. How do we do that?
Oh, wow. I think what is exciting right now. Sorry, go ahead.
Well, I don't want you to think too hard about it, because you do this already.
Well, go ahead. I mean, okay. So what's exciting is some of the plant-based stuff that I'm seeing today. Plant-based is making great strides. I would be the first one to, you know, ridicule a vegan cheese, but wait till you try the latest vegan cheese coming out of Asheville, North Carolina. It will fry your mind. Okay. And so as a non-vegan cheese guy, things that are excellent will sell. Right. So the one thing I do in this, like as the old man of the food shed, is, you know, I look at labels, I look at price points, I look at ingredient lists, and I look at the experience, right? What is this experience of eating this product? And so excellent products will sell. In the case of booze, the business that I'm in, it's small batch limited releases. Hard to get, rare, and expensive. That's the space that prospers today, while the big old commodity guys are shutting the factory down. I don't know if you heard that Jim Beam's closing.
Yeah,
they're going to take the year off. It'll be like
Lyle,
60 million gallons fewer, you know, worth of bourbon this year.
You put Jim Beam out of business. Come on, you're pretty good.
Okay. Okay. You brought up the issue of angels. Does this kind of financing require a supply of angels who are willing to risk capital in a way that most would not? And where do we find all those angels? Lyle, do you think that's the case, or is it something more locally born and locally grown in that system?
I think in our case, angels is too big a word. Maybe the word is neighbor or something like that, or customer, or eater. Yeah. You know, so I don't think angels to me sounds. Also, you know, it's you know, at one point you used the word structure. I would say it's not really a structure. In fact, I would say structure is not Woody's genius. I think Woody's genius is in inspiration. But, you know, there isn't really another organization you can look to and say, oh, yeah, slow money would be like that. Or, oh, we could have been like, I mean, it could have been that, but I'm not sure that that is maybe Woody's way.
Well, I can say.
Why do I wish I could hear him now?
I'm against structure. well, if you take a corporation as the manifestation of the structure of the flow of capital, you know, it'll sound if I put my foot in my mouth a little more. No, I'm not against corporations, but I'm against a corporate approach to farming and local food systems that destroys the essence of healthy farming and local food systems. And so deconstructing, actually, there's a good word to use right now. We have to deconstruct some of the systems that are there. Industrialization is a bunch of structures. That's what it is. We're not suffering because from insufficient industrialization. We're suffering from too much industrialization. And so if you say words like agrarian in contradistinction to industrial, say what are agrarian values? Is that even a thing? Well, it isn't much of a thing anymore, but it isn't because of the industrialization of the economy and specifically the food system. So yeah, the word structure is pretty loaded. I think going back to what Lyle said, picking up on the word neighborly is beautiful because this is, I mean, people's feeding one another and helping one another, mutuality, conviviality, slow food uses that term. I mean, these are basic social, I'm going to really screw everything up now, basic social constructs. Just let's make it nice and ambiguous. But the point is we have to restructure. How about that? We need to restructure some of these relationships at the local level. That will allow for more informality, more neighborliness, more mutuality, more cooperation, more a greater sense of place. And that all sounds mushy, particularly in a world where you just click on cryptocurrency and you something happens. But it is vitally, I believe, you know, vital to our survival.
And that, how do those neighbors find each other, Lyle, in regard to building a slow money organization, building a slow money contingent for the community? Right now we're kind of isolated in our own little internet connection. And so we go through the traditional means of, well, I talk to my banker and my banker is really happy to lend me money if I have money. I can talk to the government sometimes and they have loan programs, sometimes grant programs, and they're usually oversubscribed. And then you have to go back to a bank sometimes before you can get funding. So it's a structural nightmare to get the, you know, $20,000 sometimes. Or you can go to a lender that is going to charge you outrageous interest in that situation. How do we find those neighbors that can come together and say, okay, I can throw this much into the pot and you can throw this much into the pot. Let's help Mary's Food Kitchen stay alive this week, or let's get so-and-so a better dishwasher so that they can serve the people down the road. I'm trying to understand how we can generate that groundswell of people willing to help people, because there's a bunch of people out there that want to do that. They want to help their neighbors. They want to see returns, and they want to see a thriving society, especially in our rural areas, which are just getting hollowed out right now by corporate decisions that are made somewhere else. And so the farms are getting bought up and industrialized, and the other resource-based things that we're doing in rural communities are being just managed by hedge funds instead of Bob the guy down the street who was running the mill. So where can we find the common ground or put that together? Is that a co-op model? Should we look at possible cooperatives to do that, Lyle?
So we did it through facilitation. We did it through meeting in groups at bars and restaurants. And Carol would give a talk. Carol and Lyle would give a talk, you know, and then Carol would go out and meet tirelessly with the farmer that was saying, well, gosh, maybe I should ask for this, or the butcher that says, well, if I had this, I could do that type of thing. And so it was facilitated one-on-one. And I think actually our project got bigger and bigger and bigger through face-to-face facilitation. And that's something that Carol Hewitt's marvelous at. And I also think that that's the reason our slow money in North Carolina kind of has receded or gone away, is because of a facilitation model. And then now we've got a pandemic lockdown. Doesn't work. You can't get the big crowds out to the restaurant like you used to. And so, and I think, you know, our executive director, Carol, just moved on to other things. And so Slow Money North Carolina have kind of, you know, dissipated on that front. So no, I don't think it's a, you know, I don't think, well, I mean, of course I don't want to knock a co-op model, but I don't know if a co-op model, co-op models might work in some places. They might be a good idea. Sometimes co-ops are great ideas, and sometimes they're not. That's the other thing. So it's not really co-op good, you know, hedge fund evil. I think that there is such a thing as evil co-ops. Farm Bureau of North Carolina, if you would like an example.
Yes.
And then I think there's also such a, you know, there is such a thing as business for good. There are, you know, there is B Corp certification, and you know, there's probably, it's not a function of co-op good, hedge fund evil. Both can be either.
Well, I think what you're saying is you need champions. And
that's right.
And then you need succession planning, because burnout is the thing. Burnout comes.
Yeah. That's absolutely right. And so, yeah, that's exactly right.
These movements do have a curve. And sometimes you're riding the curve up and sometimes you're riding the curve down. And how do we look at ways where, and that's where I come back to that word infrastructure or support that allows the concept to continue without the energy suck that comes with having a champion go out and make things happen. And then when that champion either moves on or goes away for some reason, the energy of the whole organization goes away.
Well, that's for me, it's
trying to build an economic engine that provides meaningful work. That's what you have to do, is you have to provide an economic engine that provides meaningful work and get a big enough engine going that it can actually power the movement. So that's where, you know, that is kind of my life's work.
And so, but
the momentum, yeah, I was going to go to the momentum, Woody. Where do we, how do we build that momentum and make it create its own energy?
Well, a part of the answer is a direct follow on to what you were just discussing. So Lyle was talking about creating an engine as a small business. That's one kind of engine. We are now creating, I'll just stick with the engine metaphor, small engines using the following model. Now, this is a funding engine. This is an engine for funding small farms and local food businesses. We're taking, I'll give the example of Boulder, Colorado, where I was living until a few years ago. That what I'm now describing, there are, let's say, four pure examples of this in the US, and they're all in Colorado because that's where I was. And then there are two other examples that are kind of sister examples. And now there's another one starting in Israel, which is also a pure example of the following. People donate some money, donated capital, small amounts, It can be small amounts. If it's a larger angel donor, they can put in five figures, which some have. But most people are putting in $25 or $100 or $250. That money goes, is a tax-deductible donation to the local pool, the local group. These local groups have the, either their own 501c3 or they're affiliated with a local fiscal sponsor. Then they meet, just like Lyle was talking about, people get together with the farmers and they decide collaboratively, if you can believe it, who to make 0% loans to. And they're all making 0% loans. And then that capital, when it gets repaid, recirculates in the community. Now, the structure, if you go to the engine part of this, is in Boulder, we started roughly in 2017-ish. And COVID hit, of course, that slowed things down a little. But we now have about 115, that's more than that, probably 125 plus individual members, meaning people who've made a donation in the current calendar year. Therefore, they get a vote. They've made almost $1 million worth of loans, approximately 40 loans. Only a few of them have not performed and paid back, to your earlier question. Most of them are four-year loans. We don't have to go into the details of that. Some of them are five. And the reason I went into that detail is so people can hear actual numbers and scale, because what happens is as the money starts recirculating and you suddenly have a flow of a few $100,000 in the bank and money coming in and going out, you can get to the point as a group that you can pay for staff. And the Boulder group isn't quite there. The Boulder group is being led purely by volunteers still. But over time, it will afford the flow of capital to pay some staff because it's a nonprofit. It's not a for-profit. And so the group can decide to invest in itself, if you will. And that is important because what Lyle described, Carol Pepe Hewitt was one of the superstars of the slow money movement. And after 10 years, you know, I don't know how old she was when she started. She was probably 62 when she started. And she was, I'm probably getting in trouble. I take it back. Edit that out. I don't know how old she was when she started, but I know she was 10 years older when she stopped. and so absolutely, you can't maintain optimal functionality with pure volunteers. Over time, you need to build some capacity. So creating these recirculating pools of capital locally are a way to build capacity long term.
Okay, with that, I'm going to ask the one future question of where do you see this movement in 5 years' time, and can it connect the dots of these localized organizations that could possibly affiliate on a more regional or national basis? And I'll ask Lyle that to see if he can put his crystal ball to work.
Let's see. Can you connect the dots? I'm not entirely sure, but I think it's important to realize that those dots are out there. And they're actually in every place you can go in this country. So you pick a town that you think is uncool, maybe Orlando, and you find cool stuff happening in the local food movement on the edge of town where they propped up this and they took over an old army base and they financed it this way and they, you know, and the mayor got behind them and on and on. And then you go to the next town, let's go to Buffalo, New York, right? It's not, you know, we can all say, oh, declining Rust Belt. No, there's really cool stuff going on in the food system in Buffalo, New York, and Cleveland, and every other place you go.
That's great. Woody, I'm going to ask you the same question.
Yeah, I would again, I have a really simple answer to this one. We are trying to connect the dots through the new Bitcoin.org site. So go check it out. It's only been live for 2 months. We have no marketing budget. I hope that will change soon, but yeah, I'm working on it. I do think so. So Lyle described one set of dots, and I totally agree with what he said. I think what we all want to see happen, and I'm saying we, meaning just this we, you know, us versus them, us, whoever the us is. We want to see a much deeper, more robust, and effective countercultural movement to reassert our common humanity against forces of fakery and techno-utopianism and hyper-financialization and wealth inequality and populism and all these things that are going on. And that sounds like a horrible litany of things, but they exist and they're all tied together. And so I think the food move, I think what the dots that Lyle described, the small little move of food things around the edges of everywhere, is part of a larger resurgence of countercultural energy that hasn't fully expressed itself yet. And we're trying to aid and abet that with the new Bitcoin site and any which way we can.
Well, could I just come in while we're finishing off? I want to try and just get a sense of maybe just concluding everything so we can get a decent recording. There is a movement that I've picked up in Southern Africa, which is about a $50 billion $50 billion in terms of loans given to local communities by local communities. It's called a Stockfell. Now I've put that into the chat. I don't know if you've seen that, but it's a very Dutch term that, but it's a Stockfell, which is STOKVEL, and it is communities funding communities. It is literally that thing that Woody and both Lyle have spoken about, and it is a $50 billion community. You know, we're not talking small money in that respect, and I would imagine, based on the discussions that I've heard this evening, I think for me, if I just listen to how exciting this whole environment is, we're moving away from keeping up with the Joneses, this hyper, I don't know what is commercialization of everything, to becoming real human beings again, which is really refreshing for me to see and to hear and to understand. And we're moving towards that in terms of a drive and let's say a movement towards that type of sort of culture. We've had too much of the big A-list stars and, you know, Tyler, what's it, those singers and everybody has got to say. It's more about the community. So that's just one aspect that I'd like to just pick out, that this is actually a real thing. It's done in reality in many communities across the world, and it's not something that you're just dreaming up. It's actually happening right now, which is quite exciting. So I don't know if you want to just comment on that. Maybe Woody, if you want to start on that, just to help me finish off on the record.
Well, first I want to be a healthy skeptic and hopefully healthy, definitely skeptical. Of the number 50 billion, that's really a hard number to believe. Without, of course, I don't know any of the details, but what I wanted to say, whether that's obviously if it came from a credible source and there's some flow of capital and they're measuring it that way, that's one thing. Scale is part of the problem. Like, you're absolutely right. I mean, everything I've done could be described as warmed over E.F. Schumacher and Wendell Berry. I mean, I didn't have to come up with a single new idea. But I did, just a few nuances, a few, you know, threads woven together a slightly different way, but the threads have been going on for a long time. You're absolutely right. And I think we just have to be wary of measuring success in the billions. You know, that's not, yes, there are billions of people. So sure, billions, whatever, but we need to trust in terms of the actual doing of the thing, I forget the phrase you used, Dudley, about humanity, restoring, reaffirming a common humanity, whatever that was. I'm thinking of it as reaffirming, you know, the real versus the fake. I mean, which is the same thing, stated slightly differently. To do that, you have to be willing to go, if you go back to what Lyle said, just into relationship with people that live near where you are and be real with the people, you know, be real with one another. And we all know that that's how powerful that is. So you're right there too. It's not, there's nothing new under the sun on this. It's reaffirming it against the claims of global financial, technological, clicking, flowing, and come all the way coming back to billions. So.
Yeah, I've actually put in the chat there the source of my information. So
yeah, great. I'm definitely going to check it out. Check it out.
It is actually very, very interesting what that community has done as a second tier community. That's an unbanked community. In other words, they don't take part in the banking system. Essentially, they're outside of the banking system. So, which is very interesting. I don't know, Lyle. Do you want to comment on that? I thought maybe just to tidy up the recording.
Well, sure. I mean, I think I'm not familiar with that link. I haven't had a chance to click through, but I think the concept is it's going to be different where it's going to be different, and everything's going to take its own form. So over here it's a CDFI, over there it's a co-op, over here it's a Stockvel, over there it's peer to peer. I think it's basically finding a role for money in the food shed in a myriad of meaningful ways. That there's, it's more than one way to skin a cat.
Woody, thank you both. What I keep coming back to is the idea of slow money. Small farms, local food, community scale capital. Not every investment needs to be fast. Some need to be rooted. If that resonates with you, act on it. Links to Lyle and Woody's work are in the show notes. This is When People Lead. I'm Jeff Rolla. Until next time, keep leading with people first.